This episode of the Inner Whole Uprising is sponsored by BetterHelp and Native.
This episode of the Inner Whole Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can click the YouTube link in our show notes and gaze along as we talk our shiznits. Inner Whole Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual feminist ho who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are she and her, who wears a mask out in New York City, in those just brazen streets of New York City. Amongst the maskless, there's one woman who wears a mask, and her name is Sam. And I'm here joined by my lovely co-host. Who are you, co-host?
Hi, I'm Akua. I'm not a person today, but hey.
Here with the floating just entity that is Akua. Maybe not a person, but definitely an entity. Every episode of the Inner Whole Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're talking about penis meat delicacies, finding black friendship as a chronic loner, suicide prevention month, and an understated love story about an undocumented Filipina trans caretaker in Brooklyn.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerWholeUprising so we can see it and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it. If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at InnerWholeUprising without the G on Twitter, at InnerWholeUprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching InnerWholeUprising Community, that is CUMMUNITY. You can head over to InnerWholeUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, to pay a hoe, or to check out the rest of our merch.
And if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics we discuss on this here show, or host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to do any and all of those things. To book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. That email address is in the show notes. Now we're getting into a segment that we call Ho of the Week. It is where we shout out the homies who have supported Inner Ho Uprising in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, because we love to have fun over here, is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. This week we got Chloe Town Brown, who upped their pledge on Patreon. Thank you, Chloe. And that's Chloe's nickname, because one time they told us that that was their actual nickname. So that is Chloe's actual nickname. And we also got Tacole S, a.k.a. Green Thumb, who purchased some merchandise. Thank you, Tacole. If you would like to be a Ho of the Week and get cool nicknames of your own, there are some things that you can do, and they are as follows. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can feature us in an article you have written about podcasts, or you can shout us out on social media. These are non-monetary ways that you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these uncertain-ass times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks. So please do not spend your last dollars on us. Don't even think about doing that. We don't want you to do that. We won't accept you doing that. But if you can spare some change, you can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerho. You can become a patron on Patreon by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can purchase some merchandise at innerhouprising.com/merchandise. The links to all of which are in the show notes. Let's remind everybody about our Patreon perks. For $2 a month on Patreon, you can participate in things like our Slack chat, our patron-only film nights, and for $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any patrons here, you can receive access to our episodes a few days early, entry to our workshops and parties, virtual these days, and you also receive entry to our pre-episode recording sessions. We had one just now at 10 o'clock in the morning. Our former IHU Ho of the Week, Reggie Rocket, was there, and we were just there shooting the shit. Reggie rolled out of bed, and we were just there together talking about Florida man, talking about nails, cats, The Lion King 2 and the fact that it's the greatest Disney movie of all time. And many other things of that nature. So that is something you can do if you are on our Patreon. Now we're getting into a segment that we like to call Self-Care Tip of the Week. Not exactly doing a tip this week, but Akua is going to tell us a little bit more.
Yes. So this self-care is going to revolve suicide, specifically Suicide Prevention Month, which is September. So content warning if that is something that makes you uncomfortable or triggers you. So yeah, September is Suicide Prevention Month, with National Suicide Prevention Awareness Week being this week, September 6th through the 12th, and Suicide Prevention Day being September 10th, 2020. When I was first thinking of the self-care tip, it was going to be talking about speaking your discomfort as an act of community and collectivism and an act of defiance. And it's something that I've been challenging myself to do as I've been feeling mentally unwell, is not feeling like a burden to others, allowing other people to hold space for me and speaking my discomfort. It's something that I do with physical illnesses, but realize that I don't really do when it comes to mental stuff. So Sam will always hear me tell about my hip hurt, my eye won't stop blinking, my ankles. Like, I'll always tell her when there's something physical going wrong, because I'm also low-key a hypochondriac without access to doctors. But when it comes to my mental health, she has offered space and I have denied it. You know, when I had to really question myself and be like,
time and time again, Akua, girl, are you okay? Is there anything I could do?
Nah. And this is me, a whole mental health professional. A whole mental health professional.
I feel like that.
But it, yeah, so I really, you know, it was low key a challenge to myself to be like, you know, learn to speak your discomfort. And to push back against this individual belief, or this individualistic societal culture, because that's what we have here in the States. And I really do think that it's the belief of individualism that strengthens the crippling clutch of mental illness and suicide, along with oppression and marginalization. You know, and for, I'm going to define it. So individualism is a social theory favoring freedom of action for individuals over collective control, and it prioritizes things like independence, self-reliance, you know, and really posits the dependence on others as embarrassing or shameful. So it's really that pull yourself by the bootstraps, you got this, you don't need nobody else. That reminded me of that meme with the basketball people. Do you know what I'm talking about? Right. It's like one basketball player to another, and he's like, you don't need nobody else, you got this. And it's like, no.
Oh, where he's like trying to hype him up. It's like James Harden talking to somebody else.
Got it. That's what that reminded me of. Yeah, so I really, you know, all of that feeds into these underlying beliefs that lead to suicide, you know, feelings of hopelessness, things won't get better because you have to do it all on your own. And that's a lot of labor sometimes. Social isolation, whether you've lost people or you have then separated yourself from people because you feel worthless. You feel like, you know, you are of no value to them. And then, of course, the view of yourself as a burden to others. These are all underlying beliefs that are present when suicide is present. And all of those are very individualistic beliefs. You know, they're the falsehoods of individualism. So learning to speak our discomfort, you know, reaching out to the people in our community and saying, hey, I don't feel good, would, you know, is fighting against that, is saying, hey, these people also have a responsibility to me, they care about me, they will help me. I don't have to do this alone. There's nothing embarrassing about how asking them to carry this load with me. Mm-hmm. So the problem with speaking out our discomfort and checking, you know, and checking on our friends and all these other awareness solutions that come out, you know, during these kinds of months, is that it places the responsibility on our friends and family who may have these resources. You know, thank goodness it's being spread around so people know, but who may also not have the adequate resources or the emotional intelligence or ability to. And, you know, also if they have the resources, connect people to an already faulty system. While I applaud the work of Suicide Prevention Month and raising awareness. And I am always the one to share a hotline, a crisis text, you know, a therapist number, a directory for therapists. Like, full disclosure, I've had clients who have, you know, been suicidal, who have been very low based on things that I couldn't help them with because they didn't have employment for the past 18 months. Their rent was, you know, 17 times what they could handle. You know, they had chronic pain and no access to medical providers, or, you know, hell, even at the end, like, Medicaid being shut off because, like, so much that us talking about it wasn't doing anything to get them out of that space. Me holding space for them helped them to hold that burden, but that was all we could do. And I remember, you know, working with that client and feeling very hopeless myself, like, in supervision, like, yo, I don't know. We taking it hour by hour because I really don't know. So yes, while awareness and connection to resources and providers are all well needed, the system is faulty. And it's really the need, you know, the need for universal and accessible health care, for medication and treatment, well-funded mental health programs, social programs, community programs, access to water, nourishing food, access to jobs and a thriving wage, are some of the actions that are needed for true suicide prevention, point blank. And in this wave of rebellion and insurgent that I'm getting to live through and be a part of, I'm really starting to learn that, like, we're all that we got. And, you know, and I'm really starting to see that when we band together and we really care about an issue, we can create change on both micro and macro levels. And I want to push for that more as we're calling for defunding the police, you know, and abolishment of the police, really calling for allocation of those funds to the things that will really help us as a society in these other, you know, sometimes it all feels so unconnected, but it really, really, truly is very interconnected. So that was my little rant and my soapbox moment as I started the self-care tip. I'm still going to give y'all these resources and these numbers because that's what I can do. Just as I held space for that client, that's what I can do in this fight. You know, this isn't something today. I don't say it and then boom, we got thousands of billions of dollars to all these programs and it's all saved. Right now, all I got is resources and space. So that's what I'm going to give to y'all as my community to take care of yourselves. So if you're having suicidal thoughts, if you're rippling with hopelessness, helplessness, feelings of worthlessness, I want you to know that you are valued and you are loved, if not by anyone, by me. And that means if I also have never met you, you are me valuable. Too. Sam too. You are valuable to us. Because even you listening to this podcast gives us purpose, gives us hope, you know, in our low times. And all you did was click a button. So you are loved and you are appreciated. Sam will put this in the notes below, but you can also reach out to the National Suicide Hotline if you are in the States. And that's at 1-800-273-TALK or 8255. And you can also text a global crisis text line, which is 7474. You would text HOME, H-O-M-E, to 741-741. I have to get better at more global resources or resources for other countries. I'm very U.S. centric, but that's not my fault.
I mean, this is a country of individualism, right? Thank you very much. Yeah, I think that was very good. And though maybe not a 1-2-3 boom, 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 you're done self-care tip, I think it brings to mind a lot of things that we should be thinking about in terms of how we are crafting our futures on this planet, both in the bodies that we live in now and for, you know, future generations to come. If thinking about people in the future is your kind of thing. I have been so heavily feeling fuck individualism lately. And I'm glad that you said that. I almost want to name this episode Fuck Individualism. Because it's just like, there's that whole, like, you was born alone, you die alone. And, like, yeah, sure, at those two very moments. But who the fuck gets you through?
I mean, even when we think about, some people do die alone, but you're never truly born alone. Your mama was there. Like, there was someone else there the moment you were born.
You were actually living in someone's body.
for 9 months, who sustained
siphoning
you
nutrients and, off them
and cared for you and protected you as you developed at one of your most vulnerable times. Nigga, you was not alone. And you know,
you wasn't alone. That's a very, like, back then they didn't want me, now I'm hot, they all on me. Like, I've been alone since I was a baby.
You wouldn't have made it.
It was an umbilical, there was an umbilical cord there.
There was a hole.
It was a full umbilical
hole.
Individualism is just so backwards. We are literally a communal species.
Social and communal, literally.
That's why babies can't do it by themselves. Like, these niggas can't do it by themselves, bro. They can't walk for like several years. They can't speak for several years. They can't get their own food for several. Like, we are something to think about. Something to think about. Well, as we've been discussing in several episodes of this podcast, we have all had a really tough go at it this year. Personally, and I'm sure many people relate to this, the pandemic, the uprisings, and a bunch of grief surrounding 2020 hasn't been the best for my mental health, and I'm sure it hasn't been the best for y'all's mental health. And something I've really appreciated to help me through has been the online therapy service BetterHelp. We're talking about getting help from other people. That is literally what this service does. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account at any time and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today, as do we here at Inner Hall Uprising. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily if you don't believe the things that we're saying. And you can visit betterhelp.com/IHU, that's better H-E-L-P, and join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're actually recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states, because everybody needs some help right now in all 50 states. We have a special offer for our listeners, and that is that you can get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/IHU. That is betterhelp.com/IHU. On September 16th, yours truly, that's me, Sam, nice to meet you, will be speaking on a virtual panel all about podcasting, one of my favorite things in the entire world, at an event called Inside the Black Podcaster Studio. This is a virtual podcast creative kickback hosted by Afros in Audio and sponsored by Acast. You can join myself on September 16th with two incredibly dope audio producers in the game. We got TK from the series TK in the AM, and just a dope producer all around. And we got Anthony Frazier. We will share our experiences and insights producing content in today's podcast industry and answer your questions. You can show up for a community of Black podcast creatives and professionals who are showing up for you. The link to RSVP to that will be in the show notes. Once again, that's Wednesday, September 16th, and I hope to see you all there. I shine bright in all my different colors, all my different colors, colors. We shine bright in all our different colors, all our different colors. Brooklyn Spiller, bad girl killer, known as the baddest, ass ain't the fattest, more than my assets, and I still cause a lot of havoc, but I be on peace and positive energy, still living in a world where folks trying to kill me. Here I be, black women and queer, created all these rules that I couldn't adhere to, resilient, but don't ever fuck with my rights. The more I rise, the more they're trying to bring me down, 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 da, 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 down. And now for the main dish, the meal, the sustenance of the episode. Let's get into our first segment, which is called Fuck That, our current events segment. And Nakua has a very interesting story and very interesting tidbits, and I'm excited to hear. I'm getting hungry.
So yes, so let's set the scene. Let us set the stage. Imagine you are prepping Sunday dinner. You like an audience, so you're on Facebook Live with Auntie.
Cutting up my onions
and my garlic. You look down in one of your pots, and you see a dick in your beans.
Right? Yeah. Not a dick in my beans. Not again.
So, this actually took place in Akron, Ohio.
Akron.
I like Akron. Akron. Because it reminds me of Akron.
Trying to take it easy.
Akron, Ohio. All right. So a woman by the name of Lamia Singfields was in the middle of cooking beans with smoked turkey or pork tails. You know, it's not clear because the package said smoked pork tail. No, the package said smoked turkey tails, but her receipt said smoked pork tails. And that only added to her confusion when she tried to identify this meat.
Okay.
But she is cooking beans with some smoked tail of an animal.
Okay.
Presumably. On Facebook Live, as she does every Sunday, let's say it was, when she looked down in the pot and realized that one of her meat looked rather phallic-like. Looked a little phallic-y.
She remember that song, Dick in a Box, from a couple of years ago?
No.
Oh, it's like, it's my dick in a box, baby. I'm like, it's my dick in a pot, baby. That's what's happening.
So then she proceeds to put it on a plate and ask her viewers of Facebook Live what they thought it was. You know, she was like, this looks like a dick. Hold on. Let me get this out. Pop, put it on a plate. Y'all think this looks like a dick? And upon further inspection, realized that it did look like a penis and that it also had a hole in the tip.
Oh.
So this is all she needed to be confirmed in the belief that this was a dick in her pot.
It's a dick in my pot, baby.
So she called the health department. No one answered. Said, nope, I'm calling the police because someone is either running around missing they thing or they dead. And I don't want no parts.
Good point.
The police come, and of course, the police, to then believe that it's a penis and collect it for further examination.
Wow.
So they take it to their county medical examiner's office, and eventually it was tested, and that it was determined that it was just a normal piece of pork. Their official conclusion is that it was most likely a pigtail because there was a bone running through the middle of it.
Okay.
So yeah, that was Lamia or Lamia's experience with this dick in her pot.
Is there any images of the dick or the turkey tail mistaken dick identity? Ooh. Okay, sure. All right, let's screen share this. Once again, if you're not on YouTube, you're missing out. Okay, it does look like a dick.
Looks like I just cooked a penis. And it then she said there was like a hole in the tip? Nah, like, that's what I'm throwing it away, and I'm throwing the whole pot away.
Yeah, you can't eat those beans after
you
that.
Can't eat the pot. You can't eat the beans.
I kind of see the hole.
You can't.
This is fucked up.
You can't cook in the pot no more. Like,
throw the whole kitchen away. Maybe replace the
refurnish it.
You got to redo like the walls in the kitchen because it's absorbed the cooked dick. Okay, all right. Well, there's that. There's definitely that.
That was Lamia's experience. Upon further Googling, because I was like, oh, this is weird, I gotta Google. A similar event happened in 2016 in Ghana. And you'll be able to click that link and see the photo of her penis meat. And a woman by the name of Akoshua ordered some street food and then, you know, took it home to enjoy in her home. And two found a phallic-shaped meat. She too thought it was a penis and took it to a lab technician friend who said that their available resources wouldn't be able to identify the meat as she had already cooked it. They wouldn't be able to identify what it was made of, and advised that a forensic test would need to be done, similar to whatever happened at the medical examiner's office. But this is Ghana, and I'm Ghanaian, so I can tell you this was not about to be prioritized by nobody's police police department down there. Not at all. And Okoshua, too, knew that. So she gave up. And as the article stated, this was in 2016, it remained in her fridge. I don't know if it's still there.
Still there to this day. To
you this know, 4 day. Years later to this day.
It's just a party trick. Like, hey, guys, want to see my meat dick?
But Okoshua said, I don't got it. I'm not taking it up with those people. We just going to leave this in my fridge. And maybe she was hoping to hear a news story of someone, you know, missing a penis or dismembered body parts, and then would bring it up, and that would be more impetus, you know, to be taken seriously by her police department. But I don't know what had happened with Okoshua.
Hopefully this world-renowned podcast that we have over here falls upon ears of Ghanaian law enforcement, and they're just like, oh, we got to get back on that. Let me show these pictures, because this one really looks like a penis. Like, I'm not sure what meat this one is.
But it looks like the penis of something.
Yeah.
Whether animal or human.
This one kind of scares me. Yeah. This one scares me.
It's the textures.
I don't love that. Yeah. I don't love that. And then here it is just like in her dish. Akua, what dish was this? What was she making?
I don't know the pronunciation because the white man has stripped me of my native language.
Tuzafi was purchased from a fast food joint. Oh, gosh. They just cooking dicks up in the McDonald's. Up in- McD's nuts. All right, anyway.
Oh, man. So then this led me down another rabbit tunnel of actual penis foods or penis-shaped meats that people ingest. So a lot of the research I found was very China-centric. Don't know why, because I know that this occurs in other cultures. But there was a lot of reports that Chinese people believe ingesting the body part of an animal will cure any ailments of the similar body part that you have. So you'll eat the liver to help your liver, such and such. But also that eating, and following that thread, eating the genitals of animals will increase male potency specifically, but also does wonders for women's skin.
Okay, it's like just drinking cum is like, oh wow, yeah, this like cleared up my acne. Yeah.
And there's actually this restaurant based in Beijing called Gu Li Zhuang, which the name of it means strong sexual strength inside the pot. Or so I've been told. So my research said. If you're Chinese, let me know if that's a lie. I can only go with what National Geographic told me. And also what Wikipedia said. So there are a restaurant based in China that specializes in dishes prepared from the genitals, specifically penis and testicles, of male animals from a wide variety of animals, such as horses, seals, oxen, donkeys, dogs, deers, goats, sheep, snakes, roosters. They got it all. They got all the dicks. And one of their famous dishes is like just this big pot of stew that just features all of these different penises.
Wait a minute. I need to try that immediately. What?
When I was watching the video, I was like, me and Sam are going to go to China just to try this restaurant. Like, that's where we're going.
Dick stew. Oh my God.
It's a dick stew. Outside of China, we have milt, which is the genitalia of male fish or other water-dwelling seafood creatures, which contains sperm. So specifically the sperm sacs of these fish or seafood that's eaten in several parts of the world, including Russia, Sicily, and Japan. Next, I found caldo de cardon, which is bull penis and testicle soup, which is consumed in Bolivia and Colombia. Also thought to improve potency, but specifically in Colombia, it's said to grow hair on the chest of children. I'm like, why are we doing this to the kids?
Oh, God. I just feel like Latin America and the Caribbean just be on some other kind of shit, man.
Go on some other stuff.
I'm not surprised to have heard that.
Oh, so that took me out. Then we have sanguche de potito, which is cow rectum sandwich, eaten as a snack in Chile.
That's quite a snack there. You're going 0 to 100 real quick. We went from pretzels to cow butthole.
To cow booty. Yes, we did. There is yak penis, which is eaten in Shanghai. And so we're back in China. And they prepare it. I love the description of how they prepare the yak penis. They cut it into swirls. And then mix it with a chili broth and serve it in a hollowed melon.
I like this segment.
The flavors, I was just sounds all over the
delightful.
Place.
It sounds delightful. Sounds like a delicacy.
It sounds spicy and I need it. Like, I was like, chili broth? Y'all got me. It's also said to taste similar to oxtail, but only better. And I was like, oh, there we go.
Better than oxtail? Wait a moment. Excuse me? There's a
Jamaican
me?
Person who just turned this off and like threw their phone across the room because of blasphemy. They're like, oh, these bitches are lost. But I'm only reporting what I heard, what was written. Okay. I was like, better than oxtail. I got to take my ass down to Shanghai.
I gotta try it. And I gotta bring some back and like go to my local Jamaican restaurant like, yo, what? So trying to dish?
Y'all about to cook these up or not? Like, so those are actual penises and genitalia.
Can I add one more?
Oh, yes.
It's the same as caldo, I think, but Jamaicans specifically call it cow cod soup. And it's made of bull penis, and it's meant to be an aphrodisiac. Like, you're supposed to get horny when you drink.
Now, you know, which, I never knew what was what cow soup was made.
Okay, cool.
I was like, what is the cod of a cow? Okay. What is it?
So, back when I was younger, you know, like, families, like, disperse over time or whatever. Like, when elders die, families get less close. But when, like, my family was, like, a very, very tight unit, we would have, like, because there's mad people in it, we would have, like, big occasions in Brooklyn or whatever. And the soup of the fucking evening was always cow cod soup. And you know I'm a soup bitch. And you know I love soup. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's in it. But here I am just like a young little Sam. Just like, oh yeah, I love cow cod soup. And then like, I remember going like a couple of years after we started going and just being like, Dad, like, so what is cow cod? And finding out that I was drinking cow dick the entire time. But then I just begs the question, like, why was that aphrodisiac being so? I don't know. I'm just going to put it on like my family being like country bumpkins.
I also, when I think of specifically Jamaican aphrodisiac, I think of like
Manish water.
Yeah. And it's like, y'all are serving that at every function. Why are we preparing ourselves for the randiness? What are we doing? It's just Hennessy and Manish water. What are y'all trying to do?
It's just horny potions.
Like, just horny ass potions.
I mean, that's why the family's so big.
That's why there's so many people. Like, what the fuck?
Cow cod soup is good, though.
I wanted to do another deep dive into aphrodisiacs, but then my energy just waned, and I said, this is what y'all gonna get.
Way back, me and Shanika had done an episode like that. So I'll put that in the link in the show notes if you guys want to hear more about aphrodisiac.
There we go. So then these last two are actual foods that are shaped at, like penises. And Sam, Google them so you can show the people because they look like penises.
Okay.
And the first one I'm going to pronounce as Jeeble. Sure that is, I'm butchering it, but that's what I'm about to say. It's also known as penis fish, and it's really looks like an uncircumcised penis. But it's a sea slug that's known and, of course, consumed for its aphrodisiac effects because it's believed to enhance men's performance in bed. Based on nothing but the fact that it looks like a penis. Based on nothing. You know, people just, that's what we do. So I'll let Sam pull that up.
That is also a bit scary to me. Yeah. Like, I will eat any of these things, but it is a bit scary to me. Doesn't it kind of look like tamarind?
Yes. Oh my God.
So that's also very interesting. Just Ooh. Dick alive tamarind. Oh my God. When they cook it, what? Wow.
And then the next is Pacific gooey duck, which is a large edible saltwater clam with a neck, or what do they call a siphon, that resembles an uncircumcised penis. And it's also eaten in China, Korea, and Japan. So is Jubal. Jubal is eaten in Korea. But I remember watching a YouTuber, a Japanese YouTuber who does like a lot of food things, prepare gooey duck on her channel one time on Facebook. And I was like, ooh, that looked like a dick. She too acknowledged that it looked like a penis. But yeah, that is gooey duck.
Here's gooey duck. And yes, it does look like a dick. It's a clam. Especially this picture. Why are they holding it like that? Why is Wikipedia? That's very erotic. That's a very erotic image.
The hands are all oiled and shit. Exactly. Go back.
Lube. What the fuck is Wikipedia trying to do? That is a
very moisturized ass hand for this gooey duck. All right, Wikipedia. I see y'all.
Yeah, these are very. It's big.
Yeah, it gets big. I was gonna say that Wikipedia, that Wikipedia photo doesn't do it justice because they get very big, and they apparently live for like centuries, like 140 years. Like they some big ass.
No, not you living for 140 years only for some nigga who wants to fuck a little bit better to kill it
to eat you. But that looks like a that. It looks girthy. It looks.
This is also a very I know that this man is just happy that he caught a fish or whatever, but this is a very erotic image.
Very erotic. Like all he had to do was hold it just a little bit lower.
He all looking at it. He's cupping the balls.
He is cupping the balls and the shaft.
Yes. Now that's how you give a hand job over there. Learn from this.
Okay.
This is just funny to me. Oh, Akua, thank you. This is so funny to me. This nigga got two. He's double fisted them. Oh my gosh. I gotta go. We gotta go fishing for Akua. We got a lot of shit on our list, okay?
The world opens back up. So much to do in time.
We gotta have dick stew. We gotta fish for these fucking penis dicks. Oh boy.
But yeah, so that is that for current events.
Good. I'm glad that happened.
Hope you guys enjoyed.
That was an event. Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed it too.
One thing I had a thought of, but also did not have the energy to look into, was if there's any consumption of female genitalia. Like all of this was very male centric and species in terms of species. We not in here eating vulvas. Like I need to know why and why not. What's going
very on? Very interesting. When you would eat a vulva, is it just like, is it like two different lips or is it an intact? First of all, I don't even know what animal pussies be looking like.
I was just going to say, can we even call it a vulva on other animals?
I don't know.
Don't know.
But I would eat some animal pussies.
So for some reason, I just Googled horse pussy. Don't do that. Don't do
Why
that
was it that specifically?
Because Why was I remember.
Oh, God. Not the Mr. Know. Hands video. You talking about the Mr. Hands video?
No. I don't remember why, but something about the term horse pussy came to mind. And then I finally found what I'm looking, because it was a specific image in my mind and I found it on Google. So I don't know what the connection is, but like fried horse pussy is supposed to be a thing. But the rest of these images are just not okay. So I'm going to go back because that's not okay.
And is that what they call it? Not on some freaking Chili's baby back ribs menu. Ribs. Fried horse pussy is the special of the day. I was going to say that oysters, don't oysters look like a clitoris or something like that?
Yes, they yeah. are very bulbesque.
Yeah, yeah. Bulbesque. Ba-ba-boom.
Yeah, like so I have word. Nothing more for you guys on the horse pussy front, but go Google it yourself, figure it out. Take a deep dive.
Proceed with caution. Proceed with
please,
caution.
Please, because Google yeah. Google be wild. Yeah. The things I just saw, I was like, wait a minute.
Oh my God. Oh
that's
my
not
God.
What I was looking for, but oh okay.
God. Also, don't look up the Mr. Hands video for that matter. If you all make your own genitalia foods at home, wherever you are, let us know.
Yeah, if it's send something in your culture, let yeah. us know. I don't know about send me recipes because I know I'm going to fuck it up. If I've never eaten it, I can't replicate it. So I'm going to mess it up. But let me know what it is so I can search and educate myself more. Maybe yeah. your culture is eating vulvesque foods and I don't know about it because all my research was very male centric. Let me know.
Let me be like LLC Twitter for a second. See, that's the restaurant that we need to start, Akua. Vulvesque foods? What? Or like a meal delivery service? Vulvesque foods? Is vulvesque even a word? Did you make that up or is that really a word?
I made that up. I don't know if that's an actual word.
It sounds so good. Vulvesque foods. Like, I feel very like, I trained in France. Like, fuck colonialism and fucking yes. and centric things. But I trained in France. Vulvesque foods are my specialty. Uh-huh.
I love it.
So silly. All right. Is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit? Helping you unlearn some old shit? Making you think about some vulvesque foods recipes? Or just allowing you to have a good ass time? It is? Well, we love to hear that. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, you can take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and leave a rating for the homies. If you got some extra chickity change, you can drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho or join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. Or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. It's a really good podcast. All of those are very supportive of us, and we love and thank you for all of your continued support. Now, Akua, do you know what I believe?
What do you believe?
I believe that you can look, feel, and smell like a snack without harming your body.
Really?
Yes, yes, I do. And that is exactly why I dig my native deodorant. Because it's a great product. I'm about to tell you all about it. Native deodorant doesn't just block odor better. It's just made better. You're vibrating at a higher level with Native. It has ingredients you've heard of, like coconut oil, shea butter, and tapioca starch. It's also vegan and never tested on animals. Aluminum forms a plug in your sweat glands to keep you from sweating. And that's why Native never uses ingredients like aluminum, parabens, sulfates, or talc. And you might be thinking, man, I am going to stink without my good old aluminum plugs, but that's not the case at all. And I can tell you that from like a year or 2 years of experience using Native now. Switching to an aluminum free deodorant doesn't mean you have to sacrifice on odor protection. Native will keep you smelling and feeling fresh literally all day long. With over 10 scents, including rotating seasonal scents, Native has something for everyone. Their most popular classic scents are coconut and vanilla, lavender and rose, cucumber and mint, and citrus and herbal. Currently, I am wearing the pumpkin spice scent from Native, which is a part of their special autumn scent collection that they have. And I just love lifting up my arms. It literally smells like dessert. And I want to eat pie when I smell myself. And I've also gotten good reviews from other people. So if you're trying to smell like a snack out here, Native is really the way. Native is risk-free to try. Every product comes with free shipping in the United States, plus free 30-day returns and exchanges. You can check out the over 14,000 five-star reviews that they have. And you can do what we did and make the switch to Native today by going to nativedeo.com/IHU or use promo code IHU at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/IHU, U as in uprising, or use promo code IHU at checkout for 20% off your first order. And smell like a pumpkin spice latte. Cool, Okay, now we are going to get into a segment that we like to call Ass Media. It is where I give book, TV, podcasts, film reviews that relate to sex, love, dating, gender, race, and they're usually spoiler-free reviews. Today we're talking about Lingua Franca, which is a recently released film on Netflix. The synopsis is Olivia, an undocumented Filipino trans woman who works as a caregiver to Olga, an elderly Russian woman in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn. Where Brooklyn at? When Olivia runs out of options to attain legal status in the U.S., she becomes romantically involved with Alex, Olga's adult grandson, in the pursuit of a marriage-based green card. It is directed, written, and starring Isabel Sandoval, and we just stan one who does everything. Not that you have to do everything, but we still stan one who does everything. Like, I knew it was directed and written by her. And then I was looking at the character and I was like, oh, that looks like the director. And I was like, oh, shit, that is the director. So, yeah, that's amazing. Isabel is a New York-based filmmaker who the Museum of Modern Art has cited her muted, serene aesthetic. She's recognized as a quote-unquote rarity among the young generation of Filipino filmmakers. She has produced, written, and directed 3 full-length features, which we also stan because who the fuck directs one up in here? Like, props where props is due. Her features are Senorita, 2011, Apparition, I think that was 2015, and now Lingua Franca. And she's also trans herself. So a little bit about this film. The tone is very subtle. It's very subtle acting and very subtle moments that drive the plot forward. So this is not the type of movie where, you know, you're looking at your phone and you're scrolling through social media while you're watching the movie. You really got to watch the movie. She forces you to watch the movie, which is good because movies are meant to be watched. It's also edited kind of loosely and the scenes hang and linger, which to me contributes to this. It's a real life tale and it feels real watching and the characters feel real in what they're doing and their actions and their dialogue. I feel like the dialogue is very conversational and realistic. The themes, this has a lot of themes, they include, but are not limited to, culture, age, end of life, migration, green card marriages, addiction, dementia, sexuality, gender, and peers. This is billed as a love story, so I do want to talk about the chemistry and romance of it, and some things that interested me. So, yeah, so this is this guy, it's the woman who's being caretaken of her grandson, and he's kind of an ancient nigga. Like, he's moved back to New York after some time. He has a hard time getting a job, get hard time staying on his feet, and he also does irresponsible things. And then on the converse, we have our main character, Olivia, who's literally a caretaker for a whole human being, which is a lot of responsibility. And she's also a migrant who is working to send money back home. And she's also working to, like, position herself in her life and the things that she wants to see in a life in America. So she's extremely responsible and he's extremely irresponsible. And, you know, sometimes that whole opposites attract thing is like a thing, but it's not in this. And they actually, to me, don't have much chemistry in the beginning of the film, like at all. It actually kind of like annoyed me that she was even thinking about him romantically because I'm like, this guy is a scrub. But yeah, so they don't have chemistry, but they both have things that they desire in life in the other person. Some of those things include purpose, security, sex, and companionship. Which brings me to the name of the film. I wasn't sure why it was called that, but this is just my riff of it. So Lingua Franca, by definition, is a language that is adopted as a common language between speakers whose native languages are different. So I feel like their romance was a lingua franca, like it was them meeting on common ground for the things that they needed or desired out of life at the moment. To me, their chemistry actually grows after their first physical contact in the film. And I feel like that was the filmmaker's way of saying, like, that oxytocin be oxytocinin and bringing niggas together. Some of my favorite moments in the film include how the main character And the person she's caretaking. So how Olivia uses cultural references and time references to connect with Olga, the elderly woman who she's caring for. Like she brings up like borscht, which is a Russian, what is that, beets? I think a Russian beet soup. And she brings up like Liz Taylor, like Elizabeth Taylor, like a celebrity of the 40s? Okay, who was telling me 40s?
I want to say like 40s, but I too do not know.
Okay. A time ago. A long time ago. But not that long ago, but a time ago. And that just felt very New York to me, like kind of how anybody can connect with anybody and you just know a little bit about everybody's culture and everybody's time and you can be on the subway with somebody who's from a different ethnic neighborhood of Brooklyn than you are, but you're like, oh, I know what kind of food you eat and you know what kind of food I eat. So that was like nice and heartwarming. It's a masturbation scene that was done very well. It was intercut with the prose of a love letter, one of Olga's love letters that she had received from her former partner, or maybe her husband, her deceased husband. But so it's images of the main character and the person who she's fantasizing about, who is Olga's grandson, Alex. And it begins with like her caressing her own body. And then he starts caressing her body, but you can just see hands and like her body, but her body is clothed. And yeah, it was just very beautiful. Like it was erotic, but it felt very caring and nurturing and just like what she needed in that time. So I was like, yeah, I like that. There's also some other scenes with just romantic dialogue or like them kind of trying to fill the space in between whatever their relationship is. And it's intercut with shots of New York City and like very like long shots of them just placed in New York City. And I thought that was kind of beautiful. I really enjoy how the main character is loved on by herself, her mom, her good girlfriend, who's also a Filipina trans woman, and this man. He has caveats and he does things that I don't think that a loved one would do, but he's not discarding of her to me, and he is loving her in the way that he knows how at that moment. Not saying that that is how she deserves to be loved, but just like the act of many people loving a marginalized character on screen and seeing her receive that love is just like, that's what I need to see. It's very like, once again, like with the Juanita thing that I talked about a couple of episodes, where it was Juanita, this older black woman being loved, as opposed to the older black woman in Tyler Perry films just being like violated and shitted on. That's like things that I need to see at this point in time. It also wasn't violent. There are moments of fear and tension, but not violent or exploitative regarding her being trans, which is always good to see. If you heard my review of the documentary Disclosure, which is an analysis of transgender depictions in TV and film in America from like all of the history of media, there are many, many violent moments and very, very exploitative moments. And this is not one of those things. And it is good to see not one of those things and have another drop in the bucket of full depictions instead of exploitative depictions. Aside from one motherfucker in this film, there's no real bad guy, in my opinion. It's like nuanced people living nuanced lives and making mistakes along the way. I like that there's not a big, bad, white, cishet, non-migrant man who's going to be like changed from beast to beauty by the main character. It's never like her being like, I'm going to teach you this and help you be a better person. He is a flawed person and we're exploring how these flaws show up and we're allowing space to see said flaws being worked through. And to me, the space is not her working on him, but just like what you learn over time and how you develop empathy towards other people, which is like how life actually works. This film does a great job of using real world tape. So they have like elements of like actual news clips and actual speeches that have happened in real life America to demonstrate the looming terror of ICE and deportation. And now just my general thoughts about this film. To me, at one point, like 45 minutes in, I was like, this film is not a romance. This is a horror film about ICE. Like, it did a really good job of depicting ICE as a heavy and looming threat for undocumented people. the fact, I talked about this a little bit before, but the fact that the characters had no chemistry initially bothered me, but then I felt like it actually drove the story home. But yeah, it bothered me because I didn't want to see her giving emotional labor to somebody who didn't deserve it. But I don't think that she actually did in the end. It made me think of how the weight of oppression can shape relationships. It's obvious from watching that this relationship would not have happened if open borders were a thing and people were just allowed to, undocumented people were just allowed to traverse different countries without the looming threat of ICE and this goal to get a green card or anything like that. And then I thought, does that make this kind of relationship less valid? Because there's a lot of kinds of relationships that form that way.
I don't know if I have an answer to that. You know, what we then have to dig in and unpack what makes a relationship valid in our eyes. And that can get into some murky spaces. I don't want to get there.
Oh yeah, I don't know. Okay, for another episode, because I did not have an answer to that. I'm curious to know what folks thought of the end, if you do watch this film. The end was very abrupt, but definitely made a statement and said something, and I'm just curious about what everybody thought about it. But I won't spoil it because it's a spoiler-free review. But if you have watched it and want to chime in with your thoughts, or will watch it and want to chime in with your thoughts, you can hit us up at Innerho Uprising on Instagram, at Innerho Uprising on Twitter. You can use the hashtag Innerho Uprising, or you can hit our Patreon Slack community. That's in the show notes for the episode. Last but not least, I would describe this film as a love letter to self, an empathetic look at some different lives converging at once, and a rumination on the looming terror of undocumented life. It has very pretty prose and some rich cinematography, and if you're down with those kinds of vibes and you have like an hour and a half to spare in your life, you can check out Lingua Franca, streaming now on Netflix, starring, written, and directed by Isabel Sandoval. Shout out to her. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. She love to party on the weekends. She love to party on the weekends. What you doing on your free time, baby girl? Okay, now we're going to wrap up with our last segment, and that segment is called Fuck You. It is where we read our listener letters. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to igpodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns. Include a nickname if you want to be named with a nickname. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail. We will not answer the phone. Our voicemail will. And we'll play that voicemail and respond to it on the show. So you can drop us a line at 404-491-9158. The number and the email address will be in the show notes if you want to give us a call or shoot us an email. Now we have a letter from Lavender. Lavender's pronouns are she and they, and the subject of this letter is Black Friendship for a Chronic Loner. Hi, IHU. I'm a Black 30-year-old queer bi cis woman. Pronouns she or they. I have depression, anxiety, PTSD, and I've never been great at making or keeping friends. Part of it is that I don't know how to pick them, and I'm not a great friend, so the good ones don't want to stick around. I'm friendly, but bad at opening up to people. Thank you, dysfunctional family. But the biggest problem is that most of my friends have been white. My cishet partner is also white, and I don't know how to feel about that. I don't know how to befriend Black people. I especially don't know how to befriend queer Black women as an adult. I realize I'm never my whole self around anyone except for my sister, not even my partner. I'm afraid that I'll try to befriend someone wonderful and harm them with my shittiness. Said shittiness enumerated. I grew up in a white flight suburb of New York City, Rockland County. I was emo, into metal, Wicca, and just an all-around weird, chronically depressed kid. I'm always using weird vocabulary. I talk like a news anchor and can't code switch. I might feel better about that if I didn't also pass the paper bag test. I have unambiguously Black features and very 4C hair, but that didn't stop people from asking what I was mixed with. I don't know, slave owner. My parents were Kwanzaa celebrating hippies. They were also great migration boomers, so all of my cultural references are old and weird. My parents are also probably instilled some funky ideas in me as a Black person. So one of the parents was a cop and one of the parents was a psych psychiatrist or a psychologist. They were super proud of the civil rights movement and very liberal, but also espoused aspects of respectability that caused me to unconsciously uphold straight whiteness and run from too much queer blackness. For example, thinking that being a nerd equals doing white people shit. For some reason, it felt happier to be weird in a crowd of white people than black people, and definitely let me disappear and make most of my privilege through colorism. I got used to capitalizing off of being the conventionally good-looking, middle-class, light-skinned tomboy. I've always had some black people in my friend groups, but we're always the minority and we're never close. I've dated mostly white men, light-skinned black men, and other cis men of color. I've hooked up with mostly white women. All through grade school and college, I would fall in with a group of people and hang out until it stopped working. That being, I don't actually like them as people. They're not actually my friends. We've grown apart, and then I leave. I ghost people, forget they exist in depression, and get afraid to reach out. I've never held on to a friendship more than 10 years, and most of these have been social friendships that fizzled out when we didn't have mutual activities anymore. Another facet of the problem, most of my close friendships have been with cishet men. I'm not an quote-unquote other girls suck type of person. I'm just usually more comfortable talking about boy things with boys than girl things with girls, both of those things being in quotes. Only like last year did I realize it's because I can't identify with either, but at least in dude conversations, I'm not expected to. Anyway, in college, I had a bad experience. My white male best friend disappeared to get laid, leaving me brownout drunk to find a way home with his creepy friend with whom I had the worst sex of my life. I couldn't party effectively afterward. I'd black out from nervous drinking or having a panic attack. Just not fun stuff. Ironically, I was diagnosed with PTSD back in high school for something completely unrelated, but I feel like it came back and made it hard to trust men's friendship. So now I want to go to grad school and make new friends, and I don't want to fuck this up. Other than therapy, I know, I will. How can I be a good friend to new friends? How can I be a good friend to black people? Is there new relationship energy for platonic friendships? How do I deepen friendships without being weird? If you've read this far, holy shit, I cannot express my gratitude. I mean, that's what we're here for. For that and everything you do. I've been listening to old episodes of IHU and all the BBBBBBBBBB podcast diaspora at work, and I super appreciate how smart, relatable, and funny it is. You make me feel like I'm not alone and good people exist, which is a feat these days. You keep me sane. Thanks, Lavender. Thank you, Lavender. Akua has many, many notes. I have things in my head. Let's hop into this.
So what really stuck out to me, something stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. But what stuck out to me was that there was an emphasis on befriending black people that felt a bit reductive and dehumanizing to me. Mm-hmm. I'm all for, like, all I got is black friends. So I get it. And wanting a community that reflects you and is similar to you. But the way the letter was written was just that, like, I need black people. Like, it doesn't matter who they are or what they're into. If they're black, I'm going to try to attach myself to them in some way, or I want to attach myself to some way. Mm-hmm. And black people are more than black. You know, we're more than just our race. We're not this monolith in which you meet us all and you'll hit it off with every single last one of us. I've met black people that I can't stand. You know,
it's a lot of black people I hate. A lot of you niggas. I'm kidding. But yeah.
You know, and if you're looking to attach yourself to someone just because they're black, you'll run into the same problems that you're having with any, you know, with any demographic of people, with any race of people. And it's also why you're probably not good at picking friends, because there's a focus on this one superficial facet of who they are rather than them as a whole person, a whole complex person. I don't know anything about interracial friendships, being friends with white folks, because I don't got no friends that ain't black. But from all the media that I've consumed, there's really a, you know, an emphasis on tokenism and interracial friendships, and that white people just be keeping people around with no deep relations. I don't know how real that is. I don't know how true that is. Cause I don't know. So, you know, from that, I would say that might be why you're comfortable in white spaces, because they'll just have you there.
Right.
Without needing anything that's just my black friends. Like, that's you the fair. One that they gonna reference yeah. when they start with their foolishness. I do want to say, the question was, how can I be a good friend to new friends? And I want to say that friendships are work and labor.
Yes, 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 yes.
They are hard. They don't come naturally. And especially creating new friendships in adulthood is fucking hard. Like, yeah. speaking from experience, it's really hard. Mm-hmm. And it's because many people, you know, when we're talking about 30s and up, many people have a set group of friends or a set friend or a set community and aren't really looking for new friends. They might be looking to expand themselves romantically, but they're like, this is kind of my circle. I'm okay with it. There are people who may not, or, you know, may be interested in more friends. You know, those are the minority that, you know, can speak to you and you can find friends in them. But yeah, the idea really is that most people have a set friendship, either whether it's friends they've had from kindergarten or friends they've had from high school. Like, there's just years built into friendships. And I don't know about the people that make friends at work. I don't know about y'all. That's foreign to me. In all my years of working, only had one. That was fairly new. I go to work. I don't know y'all. I also worked with a lot of white people. So that might also be it. But nonetheless. So making friendships in adulthood is going to feel even harder. Friendships don't always flow naturally and they require work on both ends. And if you're not going to put in that labor, if you're going to give up, nothing's going to cement for you. Mm-hmm. I want to say that, one, there needs to be some personal development here, mm-hmm. And learning to think and talk about yourself better.
Yeah.
Or more optimistically. You know, what quote unquote value, I don't want to place value on people, but what will you bring to this relationship that this other person, you know, needs or will find beneficial or will enjoy? I didn't read anything in the description of yourself that other black people haven't experienced in some degree.
Yeah.
But you framed it all very negatively.
And very, you are the only person who goes through these things. Mm-hmm. Or like it's an anomaly, but none mm-hmm. of the things you listed are an anomaly. I didn't grow up in a white space, and I grew up exactly like you. I was extremely emo. I liked metal music. I was into quote-unquote white culture. I was depressed. I grew up in Jamaica, Queens. So yeah, none of those things are weird.
Yeah, you know, we all grew up with parents who have instilled in us some type of problematic something, because that's just who they are, you know. And I'm a dark skinned woman, but I'm sure there are, you know, lighter skinned, racially ambiguous black women or black people who, you know, have felt the same, you know, in perspective, or like none of it just felt like anything that there isn't another black person that could relate to. And it just makes you this unique anomaly of a person, like Sam said. So yeah, I think there could be a lot of work done in kind of reconstructing our view of ourselves, mm-hmm. And identifying the positives that other people will enjoy being in relation with. Also, again, look at people as people and connect with people of similar interests and backgrounds of things that you enjoy. You're not just looking for black people, because you, depending on your space. In my space, I could throw a rock and hit one. But, you know, 9 out of 10s, I ain't gonna like them. Like, and if I there would be no fulfilling relationships if I just attached myself to black people for the sake of their black. And I know that happens a lot in white spaces. You know, it definitely was a mindset of mine when I was in grad school, because I was in a sea of white people, and that was my first time ever being in that, you know, white of a space. And I was like, black person, you gonna be my friend? I don't even gotta know you. But yeah. I did come, again, I remembered that not all skin folk are kin folk, and I met some black people that I didn't really jive with, and I met some black people that I did, and those are the relationships that I've continued to this day, because we had other things in common than being the black people in this white space.
Right.
You know, there are people I still talk to outside of grad school. We done graduated, gotten in the field, and we still meet up monthly and we chatting and all of this other stuff. You have to, you're not connecting with Black people, you're connecting with people. They may also be Black, and that's what you're interested in, and widening that circle. But you have to remember that they are whole people outside of just their skin color. And third, you know, once you find this one Black person or these multiple Black people, queer people, you find this community, you have to put in the work or it's always going to be superficial. And that means you have to work on opening up. I know you said that that's something you don't do, but that's what friendships are. They are back and forth. You have to open up and you have to foster intimacy. That's emotional intimacy, talking about your feelings, you know, asking for emotional support. I'm bad at that, but, you know, whatever. That's intellectual intimacy, you know, speaking about ideas. How me and Sam got a book club on feminist crap. That's spiritual. There are Black people that are into Wicca and other ATRs and whatever else they call it. So many names, really the same practices. Intimacy and sharing on that. You know, physical intimacy, learning to hug your friends. I miss hugging my friends, y'all.
Oh.
I miss hugging my friends. But creating physical intimacy, you know, and that's where the weirdness comes in. Learning to tell your friends you love them, hugging them, you know. Experiential intimacy, doing new things with them, like me and Sam going to go eat dicks in China one day, you know.
Yeah.
It's all of this that moves a friendship along. And there was a line in here about feeling weird. I don't know if I can find it. How do I deepen friendships without being weird? Intimacy is weird as fuck. It's weird. It feels weird. Sometimes it feels like we're doing too much. It feels awkward. That's what it is. It's vulnerability. It's going to feel weird. That's how you deepen friendships, by, I don't want to say by being aggressive.
I mean, intentional. Like, really,
yes.
Like, you have to do things on purpose.
You have to do things on purpose.
And with purpose.
Thank you, Sam. Yes. You have to be intentional, and it's going to feel weird and it's going to feel awkward, but that's how we move these friendships along, is how we create lifelong friends like me and Sam.
You ain't never going nowhere.
I really couldn't if I wanted to. Like, she will pop up. This is how weird. It gets borderline scary.
I am very loyal to the people that I love, but once you cross me, nah. But yeah.
Now, you know me and loyalty, Sam. Every new friend is like, so where did you meet her and why?
Yeah.
I don't know about her.
I'm glad you went first, because I pretty much agree with everything that you said, and those hit on the things that I wanted to say as well. Definitely, like, quit devaluing yourself, you know? Like, start to see the things that you went through in life not as negative things that wouldn't make people want to be your friend, but interesting experiences that other people can connect with or learn from. Because that's, I mean, either, like, you're bonding with your friends over shared interests, or you're learning new things from them. So that's good. One thing I will throw in, because it's been the tip that I've been on, but, like, literally, like, hobbies are a thing, and you can make friends doing them even now and even today. Shared new experiences or shared things that you're learning, yeah, you can meet friends. After this I'm about to go link up with mad people who I had never met before this summer, who are of all different ages and races, who just like to play tennis. That's just new friends.
Yes,
that's just new friends. And yeah, I don't know statistically. And maybe, yes, it does fit into, we're going full circle now, that kind of individualism thing where it's like, okay, I have the friends that I need to sustain me, and I don't need to continue building with community. And that might be the dominant view of people. But there are a lot of people out there who are looking for new people. And you saying, like, I've never had a friendship that lasted more than 10 years. 10 years is a long time.
Yeah, I read that and was like, wait a minute. That's a month.
You had friends.
Because they said that they're 30, and, like, breaking it down into, like, life
chunks
events,
of life,
like, yeah. Yeah, like, high school's only 4 years, so even if you met them in high school, there was 6 years after that y'all remained friends. That's a long ass time.
Yeah,
you know, college is only 4 years. After college, you still remain, you know, friends for another 6 years, and, you know, 4 years is the average. Your college process is your college process.
Yeah.
But, like, there are still larger chunks of time that you remained in relation with these people.
Yeah.
No matter how superficial, like, that's a long time.
Yeah. So you're definitely capable of doing it. And then also, like, thinking about how life moves in stages. I mean, either you grow with your friends, or you don't, or you stop doing things that are intentional to keep the friendships. So it's like three mm-hmm. different ways. It's like you keep going, you just stop going, or you do or don't put in effort to continue going. So maybe like here, it seems like you're kind of like also learning about who you are as a person and seeing what you value and don't value out of friendships. And you're just like, it's just a new you. And it's time for some new friends. And that's okay. Like not having friends at this current moment and wanting to make friends is a very normal thing to go through. I also don't think that that's an anomaly or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Like I know plenty of people our age, because we're pretty much the same age as you and older, who are like, I don't really have friends. It happens. Mm-hmm. You're a new person and you're coming into new spaces and you want new desires out of things. So I'm very confident in the fact that you can make friends. Extremely. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep us updated on the process. If you are, and I'm not saying you should do this, I'm not saying you should buy friends, but if you happen to be a member of the Patreon community, you already have people who are interested in one thing that you're interested in, or several things that you're interested in.
Yeah.
A mutual podcast. And those niggas be chatting in there, Dooley be in there talking about, oh, I made ribs out of coffee. There's weird people in there.
Like,
sorry for calling you weird, Dooley.
Now, Dooley, we weird too. We fostered this weird ass space.
Exactly. It's very okay to be weird. I love weirdness. But also, don't forget about virtual spaces. There's mad Facebook groups of, oh, I'm a black girl. I really like anime. Oh, wow. Here are all these black people who like anime. 60% of the people in that group you probably hate, because not everybody jives well with everybody. But you'll find some friends along the way, especially in a pandemic. Don't forget about virtual spaces.
Yes.
But yeah, I hope that helps. Thank you for doing that deep dive, Akua. I appreciated that. Lavender, we appreciate you for writing in. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate every single last one of yous.
If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. Again, join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. Head to InahoUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, To Pay a Ho, or to check out our merch. You guys can find me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram, and I'm always looking for new friends.
There you go. I'm SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and I am Carmen San Diego on Instagram, where you can see all the places that I go to when there's not a global pandemic. Everybody have a really, really great week, because you deserve to do so.
Bye.